Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SNL Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Aki and Bree are here. Jacob will show up in a little bit. He is napping right now to get some recovery from being sick because his kids are walking disease traps. And then we have a special guest joining us this week, John O'Neill. The Arcadian is here. John, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you, man?
Doing good. Happy to have you back on.
I'm always excited to be on this show. Seriously, like this is
we were hoping to get
so much
for
fun.
The VGM Con wrap up, but schedules.
Oh, just, I know.
It's tough getting 13 people on the show at the same time.
It is tough, but that was like during a sequence of like I was doing a lot of traveling for shows. VGM Con being like the first thing on my list, and then I had a music festival that next weekend with my rock and roll kids band that I play drums for, and then that following weekend, this past weekend, I was in Virginia doing Ultra Nova with Super Strikers.
Dude, I wanted to be there so bad.
Oh, it was a really good show. We had a good turnout. I think we ended up, it was a really good time. We played a lot.
How good was the show?
It was so good, but not even that. Like the venue was great. We played at this place called, Reclaim Arcade, which is like a barcade, but it almost feels like a speakeasy. Like this place used to be a video rental store back in the day, and they still have that facade up with like all of these like CBS Fox variants of VHS tapes, including like, you know, the original Star Wars releases and stuff like that. And then you go into this next room and it's like an old school, like I would say late 70s or like stuff that my great grandmother would have in her living room. Like it was that kind of setup, very warm lighting, and then just like shelves of laser discs. It was super cool. And then these barn doors would open up.
How much it hurts that you say late 70s, like my great grandmother would have, and my brother was born in 79.
Well, so, I mean, her house kind of looks like that still.
Fuck you, you like, goddamn whippersnapper.
I'm so sorry. But like my great grandmother, I mean, she's 87 now, but, and she's still kicking, but, old, like in downtown, like Lafayette, Louisiana, like that area, like her house very much still feels like it's still surrounded by that kind of atmosphere, which is cool. But anyway, so these barn doors open up and then it's the barcade and there was like pinball, old school arcade machines. They had a Marble Madness, machine, which I was pretty excited to see, and then everything was free play.
Nice.
Yep.
I'm guessing it's like pay at the door, a flat fee to get in for X time.
Yeah, and usually like those like free play arcades, like there's a couple I've been to where you have to, there's a premium charge, like basically like per game on pinball machines, but I was very surprised that all of them were set for free.
Man, that's really cool. That place sounded awesome. I really wish I could have made it down there. It's just too far for me.
Yeah, it was cool though.
Closer, like Lancaster, PA. There's some cool arcades down in that area. Timeline Arcade. Tell them to book you guys.
Timeline Arcade. Okay, I'll have to check that out. So oddly enough, or actually coincidentally, one of the tables that we're going to be talking about pretty shortly was actually at the arcade. So I got a chance to like play it physically, which was nice. Yeah. Still didn't have fun, but it was a good time. God.
Regardless.
I destroyed that
which
table.
One that was.
Yay!
Oh, no, it's fine.
Injury, thank you for coming in with the 30-month sub. Always good seeing you here. I don't know why you keep showing up. I think he likes someone on the show, but I can't tell who.
Maybe.
Jacob, clearly.
Yeah, probably. What other good stuff did they have at Reclaim?
They had OG Gauntlet. They had Off-Road. They had...
Did they have Gauntlet Dark Legacy?
No, this was like... This was like first like OG Gauntlet. So it was you know, the original theme song, like Hal Cannon and all that stuff.
Warrior needs food.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, yeah. The original I Have Not Seen Such Bravery. So they had and then you had your Pac-Mans, you had your Ms. Pac-Mans, you had I think they had NBA Jam, maybe an NFL Blitz, stuff like that. But pinball was kind of where I gravitated towards mostly. So I finally got to play the new Pokemon that Stern put out, which was a lot of fun. It was a pro model, but
Mine was a premium, I think. So
You're so lucky with your extra your four extra shots.
Yeah.
But seriously though, it's fun. The only thing I'm grateful for though with the pro model is that we still have the toy to bash, basically. It really gives like junkyard vibes.
Nice.
Yeah. Just pinball. It was all pinball, Joe.
Nice. Ball squad.
Ball squad.
Ball squad. Ball squad.
Well, I'm glad Grant can make the show.
Yeah, it's good having him here. Always good having Grant here. That'd be funny if he just popped in. Hey guys, how's it going?
And then just that's his wrestler intro music.
I love the full version of it. Like it.
Oh yeah.
The fact that he did a full like 40-second song to celebrate an episode of a podcast that will never happen again. Like, and it has lived on for this long.
It's pretty legendary, yeah.
And now one of those companies is gone.
Oh, yeah.
Well, kind of. They only put out, like, bowling and pickleball games now.
Oh, that's lame.
You're my cat, but apparently I need to give her a treat because she just got a mouse.
Oh, nice. Real one or...
No, it's a fake mouse.
Okay. I just wasn't sure if you had blood to clean up.
No. Not this time.
Yay. So, while we wait for Jacob to arrive, should we dive into the news of the week?
Sure. I was gonna, talk about some stuff. So, yeah.
Oh, go for it. Go for it. Talk about...
Oh, no. I was just gonna say, like, I finally got my house back to normal. My mom's gone.
Yesterday. Everyone's finally gone. Oh, isn't that the best when the last guest is gone and you're like, Jesus, thank God.
Yeah, 3 weeks. And I'm glad she was here, but it was nice to have the house to myself. It was weird, though, because injury worked overtime last night. So, like, I actually had the house completely to myself. It was a little creepy, actually. but my mom helped doing a lot of, like, cooking and freezing stuff. We did some gardening stuff. I got to go to the opening weekend of the farmers market locally, which was pretty awesome. I got some hot sauce from a guy in Chicago who grows his own peppers. Like, he has a pepper farm.
Nice.
And he said it was going to be really hot because it was on like the hotter side of the scale. And I was like, this is nothing, but it was really tasty. So I took some home.
This is going
to
be really hot. And you take it, you're like, this is bitch shit. Start over.
But I also went on May Day to a fairy festival, and I dressed up in the fairy wings and a little like lace thing. There was like a maypole dance. It was pretty cool.
I appreciate it didn't take you that long before you got in a new area to start dressing up.
Yes. And I had my moms with me, like both my mother-in-law and my mom. And I was like, I don't care if y'all are embarrassed, but I'm going to wear some fairy wings now. Let's go.
You should have made
that. You didn't add the Ewok costume.
I mean, I could have worn the Ewok there. It would have been fine, but it was, I don't know. I feel like that would have been a little much.
Oh, you should have combined the two. A fairy Ewok.
A fairy Ewok? Yeah.
That would have been fucking fantastic.
I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I was in college and I had to do like, it was a remote class. And so like we had to send in a video of us juggling to prove that we learned how to juggle, and we had to write a paper about learning and like, you know, the psychology of learning. and how we learned to juggle and the struggles that we went through and like the psychological principles behind, you know, physically training yourself to do something. And I was having such a struggle doing the juggling on video that I finally was like, I needed to just like get goofy with it and have some fun. And so there's a video out there somewhere in some professor's office of me in my Ewok costume juggling, because somehow that made it better.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's you a video I want to see.
That'd you got to find that professor. Be like, hey, do you keep projects? Just curious. Got a question.
Yeah. It's from a lot of years ago. But yeah.
Oh, man. That sounds like a good week. I wish my week was that fun. Mine was boring.
Oh, why so?
I got a hair up my ass, and I just played a bunch of shitty quick completions on Xbox.
Oh,
and I have like 18,000 gamer score for the month. 2 days
wow.
in.
Jesus.
Damn.
Yeah, just a bunch of shitty quick completions. Knock them out.
Hey, if you own them, you might as well do it. Fuck it, why not?
I mean, yeah.
Reclaim my console 700 meg at a time.
Hey, you know, do enough of them, and you'll eventually have enough to put one halfway decent game on there.
Yeah. I mean, you know how much storage I have, right?
Entirely too fucking much.
Yeah, I do.
But you also have entirely too much that you need to put on shit, so, you know,
yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I do.
Also, hey, Jacob.
We didn't hear that. Your mic didn't pick it up.
Hey.
That was a little better. Tiny bit better.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, there we go. We heard that.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Okay. Sometimes mics just gotta warm up. It's all good.
Yeah. Especially when you start using them.
Yeah. I assume you still feel like shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't think you'd have anywhere near enough rest.
Do you want to talk about your week at all, or should we just go to news?
I'm sick.
Fair.
Yeah.
Well, let's get to the breaking news of the
My freaking kids gave my wife and I whatever cold or virus they had last week, and now it's just like I could barely talk and my throat feels like hell.
Damn, that sucks.
Yeah.
Damn. We're going to make you talk about all the movie watch this week.
Cool.
I don't have any. The breaking news of the week that I have, there is a new Xbox boot up sequence with the new green logo. Yay.
Yeah. Cool.
Is it like a different shade of green now, or like?
Well, instead of being the black and white logo, it's like a green hue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like a reference to like maybe the OG Xbox?
Yeah, to kind of like a rebirth with the new people in charge, with Asha Sharma in charge.
That's exciting.
She is doing a lot better than I was even remotely hoping she would do.
Yeah, I had some news on my list about her and what she's been doing too. I don't know if you have it on yours, but
no, go for it. Take the lead.
Well, they announced that Xbox will be retiring features that don't align with where they're headed, and they'll be ending Copilot on mobile and halting development of it on console.
Yay.
So, former head of AI is ending Copilot where it probably didn't belong. And then Xbox hired a bunch of people from Core AI to lead positions in Xbox. And a couple of people leaving Microsoft and Xbox. So, like, a little bit of a shakeup there. Yeah.
That's, wow.
That's weird. I don't understand let's hire people with AI, but we're not doing AI. That's...
Well, it's, you know, one of the people was like a growth and development kind of person. And so they're going from growth on the core AI to growth on Xbox. So it's kind of a lateral move there, just like...
I gotta get my friend Nathan back on. Remember when we had my friend Nathan Ide from Xbox Security on or Microsoft Security on the show? We've been chatting a lot, and he's dying to come back on to talk about like what they've been doing and to kind of alleviate our fears with what's going on with AI.
Oh, please do.
A lot of the stuff he's telling me, he's like, listen, all these horror stories you're seeing online of companies getting deleted in seconds and their AI being rogue and taking over and everything. That shit that we planned for years ago. We're right. way ahead of what Gen AI is doing in the public sector. Right on. So they're not using Gen AI. They're using more practical AI.
Right, right.
Which I think is a big difference, because one of them is a good tool and the other damages the environment to make pictures of Ghibli art.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'll be interesting. I want to get him on the show soon and chat.
Please do. That'd be interesting. I'd like to hear he's from someone peoples. In the security sector.
He's good peoples. And he's actually, he's getting a little more people under his domain that work in Xbox. So anytime I'm like, hey, nudge them about the backward compatibility program, he's like, I'm telling them. Mm-hmm. And Jason Ronald of Microsoft, you may remember a few weeks ago, we had the one guy on talking about XboxGamePreservation.com. Mm-hmm. Jason Ronald of Xbox has been pointing people to that site.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, nice. This might be something to keep an eye on. This is a fun little site. So maybe more games might come.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any shot in hell of Spider-Man and Transformers coming back like the top requests on the site are.
There's so
much copium on that site. So much hopium and copium. And they're all empty.
The people want what they want. It's the heart. It wants what it wants.
And we're just all Delulu, Spider-Man games all. On Game Pass. No.
I was going to say, what was the name of the game that I really wanted? And I can't think of the name of it now. It's an RPG. It was one of the first ones I played, too.
Eternal Sonata.
Legend of Dragoon?
Yes, Eternal Sonata. That was the one, yep.
Yeah, I want that one. I want Magna Carta, too. That would be great. Yeah. Like, I could just take my microphone, turn my head, be like, let's see, Afro Samurai, Amped 3, Alpha Protocol, Army 2, the 40th Day, Asterisk at the Olympics. Battle Chess would be cool. Beowulf the game, why not? The Bigs and Bigs 2 could be possible. Black Site Area 51, Blades of Time, Bladestorm. Why isn't Bladestorm compatible? Neither of the Blaze Blues. Blitz doesn't have an NFL license to worry about. Blur, everybody wants Blur. Bomberman Act Zero, make Jacob happy. See, I could just do that.
Yeah.
I'm still hoping that they bring back the 40th Day and stuff, because even if it's just a remake, I would love those games were so fucking fun. I would love something like that to come back.
My buddy Jay played through Army of Two, the 40th Day together, and it was the best online co-op experience I ever had. We did it a second time on the hard difficulty. We went back and did Army of Two of the first game, and it wasn't as good. We did the third game. It was nowhere near as good. And then we did 50 Cent Blood on the Sand, and that was amazing too.
Yeah, I played the third game in co-op with somebody on the hardest difficulty. That was great fun for me.
Oh, you
gotta play 40th played day. That was the first one I played, so
you gotta play the 40th day. That is the best Army of Two out of the three.
I would love them just to like do an updated version, get that on the current consoles, just the whole pack of all three of them. Yeah, that would be
that'd be fun.
Fucking amazing. Even if you remove the multiplayer aspects of it, whatever.
No, you want the online co-op. We don't need versus, well, that would but be we nice. Want online co-op.
Yeah, you can remove all like the leaderboards and shit. I don't care about that. But, oh man, I would love to play those. Those were so good. And there's not really another game that was like them.
Yeah.
Because they're very different from like Call of Duty and stuff. So.
50 Cent Blood on the Sand is so goddamn fun. Mm, it really is. I'm not joking around when I say that game's incredible. Bulletproof on the original Xbox was stupid. Blood on the Sand is incredible. And it is so self-aware. Yeah. The 360 one, and it's playable on series. I still can't believe that was one of the games that made it through, but whatever. Game Pass. We got a bunch of games coming to Game Pass. This week, we got a good chunk of games this week. On the 5th, we got Final Fantasy V. And Motor Slice, surprise, that one came out of nowhere. Yeah. May 6th, we got Wild Gate and Ben 10 Power Trip.
Nice.
I think Ben 10 Power Trip has been on there before.
I think it has, too. Does.
Yeah.
Was
that, I think it got removed a couple years ago or something.
Gone and back? I don't know. May 7th, today, we got Mixtape.
Yay! Nice.
Next week, on the 11th, Outbound.
Nice. Right. I think you'll like that one a lot.
I think I might, yeah.
And then on the 12th, Elite Dangerous, Black Jacket, and Call of the Elder Gods.
I am so hyped for Call of the Elder Gods, too. It's like a sequel to Call of the Sea,
yeah,
which was really good.
I gotta look more into that one. May 14th is Subnautica 2.
Nice.
And then May 19th is the big one of the month. Forza Horizon 6 is here.
Yay.
Enjoy, Joe.
Yay! People are like, Joe, are you going to review it? I'm like, no, I already bought the fucking collector, the pre-order Ultimate Edition, so I could play it 4 days early, whatever they have. I don't want to review that thing. I want to take my own time at it.
I want to play. I just don't know that I have the time for it unless I'm carving out the time for it for, like, reasons. You know what I mean? Like, I can wait to play it, but I'm still excited for it. Yeah, but I can wait.
It's already pre-installed.
Yeah.
It is ready to go. I am just waiting for my system to be, hey, let's do this. And I'll be ready to do it. Can't be all good news, though. We got to lose a couple of games. And on the 15th, we are losing 5 games with Galacticare, Go Mecha Ball, Culebra and the Souls of Limbo, Paw Patrol Rescue Wheels Championship, and Planet of Lana all leaving.
Lana!
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Wasn't Planet of Lana just added to it not too long ago?
No, Planet of Lana 2 was just added. 2.
Yeah.
So the first one couldn't go. It served its time. It's time to rest.
Fair enough.
New Call of Duty game was confirmed to not be on PS4. We'll assume Xbox One is out. So they're finally just doing a current gen game.
Yep. It's about time. Cool.
Let's hope it's good.
Let
us hope it is good. It is being reported that Halo 2 and 3 remakes are in development.
Because
they're redoing Halo 1 to put 2 and 3 on PlayStation. That's why.
I get it. That's fair. But why not just port the Master Chief Collection with enhanced graphics?
Because then Xbox would be like, why don't we get that?
You're new to this whole capitalism thing, aren't you?
I like fucking guess so. I'm spoiled. I don't know. I'm just waiting for Marvel Ultimate Alliance to show back up. That's really where I'm at.
I know. I wish Activision would fucking get that contract signed back.
Well, the closure happens, but I think Microsoft has it, so I think they're working on it. It's just
they need to get it forever. With Disney to get the okay.
Oh, that's true.
Licensing the characters in there. I'd like to see Ultimate Alliance 3 go to more platforms.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Ah, well. Something that's finally releasing, May 29th, Mina the Hollower. And it was confirmed it will release on Xbox Series, but the Xbox One version is gone. So get to current gen.
Yeah.
Atari has acquired the rights to the Wizardry series IP and the first 5 games in the series.
Interesting. About jingles, I guess.
Yeah. And then there was a Nacon Connect showcase that happened. I'm just going to go down the games that were revealed or talked about alphabetical order because that's what I found. Curse of the Crimson Stag, The Fading of Nicole Watson. That sounds like an Aki game.
Yeah, probably.
Comes out this year. Right, Dracula the Disciple was revealed for next year.
Cool.
Okay.
New Dracula game. Edge of Memories role-playing game, anime inspired. I believe it's French, comes out later this year.
Very nice.
Endurance Motorsport series, new racing series, going to be coming out this summer. The Xbox and PlayStation versions of Gear Club Unlimited 3 release in October. Hell Is Us Switch 2 port comes out September 24th. Hunter the Reckoning Deathwish got new video and preview. That'll be out next summer. Hunting Simulator 3 is out this fall. Raven's Watch is getting Song of Thieves DLC May 27th and a Switch 2 port this fall. Sessions got a new update today. The Mound Omen of Cthulhu is out July 15th.
Yay. Right in time for my birthday.
Who do we make review Tour de France 2026?
Makeup.
Well, it's got to be someone newer. Jacob's done his time. He's done his Tour de France's.
Well, that leaves Brian me then. Miller.
Oh, yeah. Brie, have you ever done a Tour de France?
I have not.
Oh, shit. We got to initiate you.
I see some cycling in my future.
I'm so
June
sorry.
June 4th, you'll be ready. And then Werewolf the Apocalypse Rageborn. New game in the Werewolf series. Instead of a third person or third person behind the character camera, it's more like an overhead camera, and it's describing itself more of like a Metroidvania this time, which is very interesting.
No, less interested now.
I'm actually more interested based on what I've seen.
Okay.
Because I think the first game was kind of like just generic, I'm a werewolf, let me rip shit up. This one looks like they might be trying something different.
Yeah.
But we'll find out next year.
Yeah.
I missed one. Greedfall's DLC, Perrin's Black Mass, is out today.
Oh, shit.
Right on.
There I didn't know that.
Aki, what news do you have?
Well, nothing much, really. I have to flip over to my news section. Alcat has used some Gen AI when doing the Expanse Arias Reborn. Thankfully, it's not going to stay in the game, apparently. It's just, you know, for placeholder stuff. So, but they're getting a lot of hate for that right now, because people are, you know, freaking out because they're like, it's going to be in there permanently. We know they're going to miss it. There's going to be stuff in here, and fuck you for that. Yeah, fair enough. And apparently Steins Gate is getting a reboot for the Series X.
It was a remake of the 360 game, and it was going to release on literally everything but Xbox. And I guess enough people made noise that they added a series version.
Nice.
I wasn't sure if it was gonna, which one specifically it was gonna end up being, because I was like, I don't remember how many were on which console, because I know I've played like three or four of them, and they're all the same game.
I have three of them on Xbox 360, and I don't know which is which. And two of them look near identical.
They're all
three separate identical installs, so, and three separate listings on the backward compatibility page. So,
yeah, I've played them either on Xbox or Steam. I think it was Steam. It's been too long. They're all the same game. They're all talking about the same story, and I don't understand why they all exist. So I wasn't sure if that they were doing all of them or just one of them. And if it was just one, I was like, I don't know which one it fucking is at this point. There's so many of it. But regardless, it's going to be telling you the exact same stuff. So it doesn't matter. Just please don't redo all of them. Once enough. And that's it. That's all the news I got.
That reminds me. I actually played my Japanese 360 this week for the first time.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Yeah. Like Tetris. Shocker, huh?
Hmm.
I was doing trials in Tetris the Grandmaster Ace. And I thought I was doing good, and then it was like, you got to get 15 lines in 1 minute. Ugh. I'm good at Tetris, but I don't have speed like that. I get to like 13, 14 every time, and I can't beat that level.
I do okay at Tetris, but I was like a columns master only when I was under the influence, though.
I mean, that's a good time.
We won't say what I was under the influence of, but
everything. Brie, what news do you have?
I got a few things. GameStop is in the news this week because they've offered $56 billion to buy eBay so they can help make a platform that could take on Amazon.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
The offer on the table is $125 per share in value, and they're offering half of that in cash and half in GameStop stock or something like that. It's confusing, and I don't understand where they're going with that, but that was a thing.
I'm wondering where they came up with that kind of fucking money.
Well, that's it.
They're not worth even half that.
No, they're not. So again, they're offering some of that in cash. They must have some investors. And the rest in stock as part of the thing. But yeah, that's the whole thing.
And I'm pretty sure eBay is worth more than what they're offering. So it's like, I don't know where you think any of this is going to work.
Yeah.
At least they're going for like eBay and not Mercari.
I mean, yeah.
Or Temu. Yeah.
Well, that's Chinese.
I mean, they're going big at least.
Yeah, they're doing something.
Well, they might be able to afford Mercari, though.
that was
dumb.
Yeah. Steam's new controller went on sale earlier this week. It crashed the platform during the 30 minutes it was available for sale because it sold right the fuck out of stock. To add to this, there have been noticeable amount of them for sale on places like eBay, where the $99 controller is available for upwards of $300 instead.
Gross.
Valve is likely going to have to put something in place for purchasing the Steam box before it launches to reduce scalper accounts buying things, because that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. My next two bits of news are kind of little discussions, if you would permit me. There was a survey conducted by GamesIndustry.biz that says more and more gamers are waiting to buy video games until they're on sale. Older gamers like Gen X are rarely buying things at full price, while Gen Z have about 42% willing to pay full price for games. So what about you all? I know we aren't necessarily the representative demographic as reviewers for this survey, but no. Our listeners are. And I'm curious, like, when was the last time you bought a full price game? I mean, Joe, you just clearly got Forza.
I still buy a lot of games day one. A big reason of that is people think I get like so much shit for review and forget fact that I don't really review. So y'all are getting the good stuff. I'm not. I'm buying my own shit.
Yeah.
But like, I got Lego Batman as well. That's coming up.
Oh, okay.
I pre-ordered Final Fantasy 7 Part 2. I want to get Adventures of Elliot when that comes out. There's a new Sword Art Online this July. Gothic 2 and 3 remakes are out later. Like, there's a lot I still pick up on my own.
Yeah.
Last time I bought a game brand new was Mass Effect Andromeda. So, it was a long fucking time ago.
like, even just, like, weekly games on Xbox? Like, nothing?
Nope. Hmm. I rarely ever buy games, just in general. Unless it's like Steam, but when I get those, it's like, oh, here's a game that's 90% off or something. I'm like, well, it's on my list. Fuck it. I might as well get it. It's cheap enough. It's like a buck and a half, whatever.
Yeah. But what about you, John? What are your buying habits?
I'm usually waiting for things to go on sale only because I just think with how the industry has my alarm's going off. Sorry, it was quacking at me. I hopefully they didn't go through. It'd be funny if it did though.
I wish it did.
Oh yeah, it's
okay. Just like we have quack, this.
Quack, quack. There it is. Yeah, it's pretty much that. That's all it was. Yep, it was like, hey, your alarm's going off.
I approve.
So I think the last game that I bought at full price was Marvel Cosmic Invasion, maybe like 2 months ago. And even before that, like everything that I was buying was like maybe expansion packs for like Pinball FX, but those would usually be on sale. Everything else is I'm kind of in the same boat. Like I've kind of gotten to a point with video games where when we started entering an age where everything started becoming almost an interactive movie, I got completely turned off by any sort of video game that was coming out for during that time period. So it's really, I'm very meticulous when it comes to certain things. It's really just picking things that I have interest in. So like I love Marvel. I'm a comic book collector, so Marvel's like right up my alley. Same thing with like any of the DC stuff. Anything Spider-Man related, I'll usually, I'll hold off until it's on sale, but usually I'll pick that up.
Are you getting Lego Batman?
I am going to wait until it goes on sale. Here's the thing. I waited even so Lego games in general, like I know that we're like they're going to deliver because like especially when the Star Wars collection came out recently for Skywalker Saga, I wanted to wait until that thing went on sale and I bought it for the Switch for like $20 and it had every single DLC pack that was included with the game.
Damn.
So I saved so much money and like way more worth it. If would I still enjoy it if I paid it full price? Probably, but like I also wouldn't have to be trying to figure out like, you know, what can I move around to make this make sense or just to justify this. You know what I mean? It's different as like an adult going into this, whereas like, you know, I don't know. It's weird. Game industry's kind of weird right now when it comes to the pricing of things. Like I'm holding off on a Switch 2 because of where everything's at, and like they just announced the fifth remake of Star Fox 64, and so now I've got to go pick up a Switch, you know what I mean, because Star Fox is like one of my favorite game franchises of all time. So
Jacob, weren't you excited about the Star Fox reveal?
Jacob's I'm really bad. Fucking excited about it. Like
I am too. It looks so good.
I accidentally found out about it because I think it was Cheap Ass Gamer or anyways, like I think it was them. They had posted like, oh, surprise Star Fox Direct happening now. And so I clicked on the link and it's just like they're just showing off gameplay and I'm like, okay, so who do I have to blow to get a Switch and Star Fox? Like yep. I will start prepping my mouth.
Nope.
And the
exercises, you know.
I think it's crazy too with where the Star Fox franchise is at right now, especially with, you know, the introduction of Fox McCloud in the Super Mario Galaxy movie. Like that was such a big thing that like obviously they announced it a couple weeks before the movie actually came out, which I'm like, okay, spoiler alert, but whatever. But like I was fascinated by everything that Fox was involved in throughout that whole movie. And the fact that now there are rumors that Illumination's going to be making their first 2D animated movie around Star Fox is very exciting. Ooh. So, because I know, like, that was stuff that got announced, like, today. And, like, I wouldn't be surprised because part of that whole, I mean, this is kind of going down a rabbit hole of Star Fox shit now, but, Glenn Powell, the guy who voices Star Fox or Fox McCloud, he had to like basically write a whole synopsis of a potential Star Fox movie as part of his audition process, so that we like Nintendo could see how big of a Star Fox fan he was. And he was like, "I've been playing this shit since the first one came out for the Super Nintendo."
Nice.
So, yep. Same thing with Donald Glover as Yoshi. He's like, "I fucking love Yoshi." Like, yeah.
All right. So, related to the last kind of conversation, one of the co-creators of Fallout, Tim Kaine, thinks gamers aren't forging their own opinions on games and instead are letting streamers influence their opinions. So there's a thought in some of the developers' heads that they need to appeal to streamers more than the buying audience. My gut was that sounds stupid. But then I think of the streamers for something like Sea of Thieves and how the development for the game has changed a fair amount in season updates based on the community of streamers, as much as I'd perceive info from like surveys I've taken for the game. And so I wonder how much I've adapted to something like liking something after seeing some of my favorite streamers of the game find different ways to approach the content versus like forming my own opinion. I don't know. It's something to think about. You guys have any thoughts on that?
My favorite really. Streamers, so I like. Yeah. I don't know. I don't feel like that applies to me.
Yeah,
I mean, like I get it
for me, but yeah.
But I feel like that's almost like niche indie stuff. Like I mean, like Five Nights at Freddy's, like all that kind of like backrooms kind of horror shit. I don't know. Like,
I just thought, yeah, it was an interesting commentary that they're the developers are thinking that they need to change what they're doing to appeal to streamers. And I didn't know that we had that much influence, you know, like obviously I don't personally, but some of these bigger ones may. And that's, I don't know, it's an interesting concept.
I guess it shows the power of a community is if there's a gaming community so big and they have that much feedback and it's so, like, the whole community's passionate about it, the devs have to take a look and see if it's valid or not.
Yeah, for sure. But that was all the news I had.
Sorry, for some reason I wasn't able to mute my mic. I feel like, as someone who creates content and stuff like that, I feel like there's a level of like authenticity in game development that is lost because you're catering to your audience rather than trying to stick to what you're wanting to do for your own project, right? So I feel like in a way it's a pro because, but also a con in the sense of like kind of lessening your levels of creativity because you have a whole audience that is like, I want to see this, I want to see that, I want to see this. And you're just kind of listening to them and doing it.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that was,
you're
that was
a creator. Sense. What do you do? No.
I do things. I do stuff, Joe. I do things.
I don't.
Oh, you make podcasts, you talk to people, that's very important.
Oh god, I wish. I can't wait for our 15 years. I'm going to update our shirt to say 15 years still 10 listeners.
Oh,
I'll just take the 10 listeners 10 or 10 years 10 listeners and put like duct tape a 15 over top of the 10.
I like that.
That's good. I like that.
John, any news that you have?
Not really. I think I said most of my stuff at the beginning of the episode. And I guess some of the news, the Star Fox movie is rumored to be in development with Illumination. And it's going to be the first, potentially the first 2D animated movie that Illumination is putting out, which actually kind of might break, like a 16-year streak that they've had for their films. So,
that's really crazy.
Yeah, I hope it happens. It'd
be nice to see more 2D animated movies come out. I miss traditional animation.
Me too. It's definitely sorely missed, for sure.
I feel like all this movie talk, we should have had this.
It's movie watch.
There.
Perfect.
Jacob, any news?
No.
Oh, you gotta keep that timing in.
Oh god. Oh man, that was really good.
Yeah.
Writing that down. All right. Are we diving into reviews then?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. First game to talk about tonight. That's right, we're kicking it off with Ball Squad with Pinball FX, William Pinball, Volume 10. Developed and published by Zen Studios, released as DLC for Pinball FX April 30th for $14.99. Relive the golden age of pinball with William's Pinball, Volume 10. This amazing collection brings together the iconic Tyner pinball table with the first ever official recreation of Fire and Comet. Should we go down the three tables?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's start off with Comet. Ride the rails of a Carnival Classic, race around the Comet ramp, and chase high scores under the glow of the flashing Midway lights. Tell me about this one.
It's based on an old roller coaster from a park in Chicago. They were going to name the table after the park, but changed their mind. The whole table face is an amusement park with crowds of people walking to different stations. There are clowns handing out balloons, different lanes of our queues of people waiting for rides. The line ride. There are other rides in the park like go-karts and a gallery of games to play. And then there's, you know, ramps that are kind of part of the roller coaster ride. I think one of the cool features for me on this is the 1 million point shot at the back right of the table. You can activate that when it's all lit up and get a cool million. You have to hit the 1986 lanes at the top of the table, 1986, like a certain number of times. And then on the middle sides, there's like a shooting gallery on both sides to open up, open or light things up. There's at least one limited time shot that gives bonuses. Barry Arsler is the table creator for this one. And, you know, I've played like Whodunit and Pinbot and Joust from him. The artwork is from Python and Angelo, and I don't know how to say his name, who'd also worked on Taxi, Pinbot, and Cyclone. The voiceovers are fun things, like getting the million shot and hitting the dunk tank guy between the ramps. Like, he taunts you if you hit it at the right time. I don't know. Any other thoughts?
I do know that this is it's the beginning of the amusement park trilogy that Barry designed, because Comet was the first one, second one was Cyclone, and then the third one was Hurricane, and all of it was kind of based around these theme park elements, and it was or amusement park elements. Like, I think Cyclone was kind of loosely based off of Coney Island, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, sounds about right.
But the shots are interesting. What I love is that a lot of the characters that, or at least the clown specifically, or Dunk the Dummy, you kind of see them make callbacks throughout the other tables, as if it's all part of like one big like amusement park. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
The loop is fun. It's a nice little, you know, it's got layers to it, depending on how much you progress, but you know, it's all, to me, it just sounds like surf rock, but it's just one lead line and that is it.
It's I do like this is the dumbest thing. I like the plastic ramp in this game. It looks so retro, so it's 80s. Cool. It's so clunky. Like, it sticks out like a sore thumb compared to most pinball tables, and I think that's very memorable for it.
Yeah, it's very cool. I think Cyclone and Hurricane both have those like plastic ramp vibes too, because I think this was a series that ended, I think 88 was the last, or no, 88 was Cyclone, so I think that may have been 91 for Hurricane. Yep, 1991 Hurricane.
All right, well, let's talk about Fire. Sound the alarm, race against time to put out fires and rescue victims across a unique mirrored play field glowing with the heat of action. John, what's going on in Fire?
Fire is a really fun table. It's actually based around the famous Chicago fire that happened way back when.
1871.
You're basically like trying to save people from burning buildings. You're trying to, you know, put out fires from burning buildings. There's like side shots. There's a nice little like horseshoe thing that you can go around that kind of it serves multiple purposes, but mostly it just kind of increases your bonus over time. There's some really cool orbit shots. The multi-ball, like kind of the way everything is set up in that table, is really fun. I like the music in it. I forget who does the music for Fire. I should know this. Grant's probably gonna
Write it down. Yeah,
it's all good. No, it's all good.
It's another Barry Ouster table.
It is also that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was gonna say one of the cool things I think for this, the original table, the visual look was fitting with the 19th century look, where some of the versions had a porcelain knob for the plunger, and they had wooden hand stained cabinets. But the digital enhancements on this, if you press the B button, if you're on console, I don't know what it is on Steam, but you can see the new digital enhancements that they do. And there's like smoke effects and water effects and fire effects that are like super cool. The original back glass on the original machine had this like rotating cylinder to simulate the look of fire. But now we get like these cool digital enhancements if you want to see that. Also, this has a plunger rating where if you hit the ball just right and not too hard or too soft, you get a big score right out the gate.
Yep.
I thought that was really fun.
100,000.
Yeah. It was hard for me to figure out how to get there, but I played around with different, you know, I can't think of a word now. But I played around with it and I just, you know, couldn't quite get it right, but it was fun to kind of try and figure that out. It was a surprisingly complex table, and I actually really got into this one. Like, it didn't have the same sweeping ramps and tracks that I was used to, but it interested me to the point of difference in how you have to play the table. Like, you're kind of up against a wall as opposed to in a flow, like in most of the tables I'm used to. So that was like a different way to approach pinball for me, and I liked it.
Yeah, it definitely has some interesting like chaos to the game just with how the shots are lined up. At least compared to Comet and stuff like that, because Comet's just basically got like you got these five shots and then the whole left flipper area is basically just like you have the ability to just instantly drain and stuff like that. So yeah it's
instead
cool.
of like the two ramps on the side of the building, instead of like curving around something, you actually like hit the back wall as a target piece and then come back down to rescue people, and I just thought that was really neat.
Yeah, very true. Chris Graner was the composer for Fire. Famous pinball composer. Pinbot, you know, Whitewater, Fishtails, the other table we're about to talk about as well.
Yeah,
he also did the music for that. So
Good tie-in.
Let's talk about also that taxi. Table. With Diner, step into the charm of a classic American diner. Collect the D-I-N-E-R lights by serving cranky customers to unlock dine time for massive scores. Who wants to talk about Diner first?
Man, I have never wanted to serve Margaret Thatcher a Frankenfurter as badly on this table, or George Bush his chili and root beer, you know. Yep. What I mean, like, it is this is probably the only table I haven't physically played out of the three, but it's still like, god, these shots are so much fun. The there's this really nice shot where it's basically just like I call it a toilet bowl shot, but basically you hit the right ramp and then it kind of spins. It's supposed to be like stirring the coffee or stirring the cup. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of watch it spin and you just build this huge bonus value. I think you can go up to 1 million on it. But it's so much fun to hit. Fun characters in this, basically all based around like actual people. So you've got like, you know, Boris, like Boris Yeltsin. Babs is Margaret Thatcher. Buck is supposed to be George Bush. Pepe, I think, is supposed to be Manuel Noriega, which I think is kind of funny. That kind of stuff. Another Graner composition too, musically. He also, a lot of the voices were done by Chris Graner, as well as Mark Ritchie, and his brother, Steve Ritchie.
Yeah.
Yep. That amazing. Was pretty cool. Amazing. So, pinball legacy.
Mark Ritchie design table, and it's the spiritual successor to Taxi, which came out in a pack a few months back. So there's a lot of similarities between this and Taxi. You know, you've got your five customers to serve, you were just talking about. Service starts in a random order, though, which is kind of cool. So you might have Babs one time and then start with Boris the next, which keeps it a little fresh. And then once you serve the customers by dropping targets, it'll actually activate like the big jackpot dine time. There's a clock that relates to that on the back glass. And how far the clock has gone is how much your bonus multiplier is in millions. So that's pretty cool. And also, after you hit all the drop targets to feed the customer, you get a grill shot instead of a skill shot. I thought that was cute.
Yep.
This was a really fun table. And like, it talks about it in the flyover on Pinball FX, some of the history stuff. And this is like apparently a signature of Mark Ritchie, and how he gets this flow is what they call it for his tables. And I think I got into the zone in this table earlier than the other tables, because there's something like simple and familiar about it, but there's enough complexity to like keep it exciting too. So
absolutely. And also, I mean, just the overall, like the cosmetics of the fact that you're in like an old school 1950s diner, to me is like aesthetically pleasing. I think the artwork on this was phenomenal. And I don't know if this was presented in the history, but the one thing I do know about like how the game was conceptualized by Mark was that it was inspired by an episode of Leave It to Beaver, I think, where Beaver falls into a giant cup of soup. And so he placed like an endless cup of coffee at the top of the playfield. That was where that shot came from. So
nice. And the digital enhancements for this one were pretty fun too. You've got like a waitress gesturing, and like if you lose the ball, she'll like scratch out the order, which was really cute. And there's like some ice cream sundaes that stand up instead of being flat on the table. So there's some good enhancements.
Yeah. There's also a live event for diners specifically. I think it's just I think it's just a standard game, just like highest score wins type thing. But based on where you place on the leaderboard, you get a special trophy that is only for that event, kind of similar to what they did for Elvira, where they like if you hit a certain score, you get a statue and stuff like that. But in this case, it's like a trophy based on your category. I think I'm in like silver right now. I'm trying to go for gold.
Nice. Yeah, I was going to say, that's something just to mention in general for those people who aren't familiar with Pinball FX. Like, the tables come with these modern accompaniments. You know, you've got these buttons to press between the classic and the new adaptation. You've got leaderboards you can compete and connect with friends. You get to decorate your digital pinball room with earnable trophies. And the tables themselves have different settings like classic mode and arcade mode with powers and different physics sets and all sorts of cool stuff. So it's definitely worth it to check out Pinball FX, and it's, you know, free to start. And they've got, you know, different demo tables and things for you to try. So
yeah, every table has a trial mode that gives you, I think, like 3 minutes on it, something like that.
Yeah.
2 or 3 minutes.
And it's finally crossplay enabled. That's been like the biggest thing. So I can finally start doing like private pinball tournaments with people.
That is cool.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about price on Pinball Volume 10 from Williams. It is $14.99, $5 a table. What do you think?
I feel like this is a good collection of period pieces. Like, you have the old amusement park, the old-timey fire brigade, the retro 50s diner. Like, it's a fun collection. I don't know that I had a clear favorite in this pack. I liked Diner and Fire equally, but for very different reasons. If I had to pick a favorite, I'd probably say Diner because it was easy to grasp. I think Comet was kind of the throwaway for me. Other than the table history, which I adore learning about on places like Pinside, I think it's worth the price.
Yeah, I think it's worth the price too. I think you're definitely getting something special out of each table because you're like, you know, you're dealing with certain eras. Diner is probably the closest you're going to get to like a contemporary pinball machine, where the shots flow really well and there's just a lot of speed in these shots, which is really cool. Fire, I've played that game physically, and it's, you know, it's a challenging game in person just as it is in the virtual one, and it's totally fine. Comet is the one that always kicks my ass, though, and it's really just because of the overall physics of that table. And the one thing that I will I mean props to the team at Pinball FX for really kind of like making the physics of that table as accurate as humanly possible, because there are certain shots that you can hit where you will instantly drain just because of how that's designed, and they definitely show on the virtual table, which is why it's probably the one I didn't play as much. But yeah, definitely worth the price for Diner and Fire alone.
Very good. Yeah. Very, very good. I added these to my collection already. I enjoyed my time with Comet and Diner. I didn't get a chance to play Fire yet, so
it's definitely worth a look. Yeah,
I'll have to get there. Yeah, I was playing a lot of FX3.
Fair.
I double checked that was a reinstall, and I fired it up, and then I just got caught playing that.
So. FX Classic. I think they actually just retitled it to Pinball FX Classic now.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
But John, that is it for you. We want to thank you for coming on, hanging out with us, chatting with us, and reviewing some Ball Squad action.
Ball Squad.
Ball Squad. Do you have any shows coming up that you want to talk about?
No shows. I am like very much deep into mixing the second Arcadian Originals album. And as soon as that is out, we You know what? I'll announce it. We're working on the pinball album right now, like arrangements and stuff like that. So we've already got three that we've done before. Bonsai Run is definitely a contender for one of them. We played that live at Magfest, and that was like so much fun. That's a Mega Beardo arrangement. And then Grant's got Swords of Fury down already. My arrangement that I've already established is Monster Bash. Just the main theme, just because, you know, someone's got to hit those notes. And then there's some dream ones, like at least some of the droney loop ones. I've got one that I'm working on for Xenon, which is very exciting. But I'll leave it at that, because there's I don't want to spoil the whole album, and it might not even be on the album. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know.
You never know.
Do you have anything you could sneak us to play at the end of the song or at the end of the show? Any early previews?
No early previews. I'm usually a stickler about that stuff, but I will say if you haven't played it yet, Super Strikers we've done a soft release of the album, at least physically, and we put out an arrangement of Sky High from Daytona, USA, and we're pretty darn proud of it. So maybe that track.
Is it on iTunes yet?
Not yet, but I'm sure I have the files and I can send it your way and people won't be upset about that.
I don't think anyone in the band would care at this point with who I know.
Exactly.
I'm gonna buy it on iTunes anyway when it comes out, because I do that shit.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, I'll see what I can do there.
All right, so Sky High from Daytona, USA.
Yeah.
Very good. Do you have any final words? Send your segment on the show.
Pinball game music, PGM. It is coming for you fucking all.
Nice.
Sweet. I'm excited.
Me too. It's been really, really fun.
Cool. We'll let you go. Have yourself a good one.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Laters.
Bye.
Next up, Mind's Eye, developed and published by Build a Rocket Boy, released originally June 10th of last year, with the update 7 releasing recently April 28th. Available on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $34.99. Mind's Eye is an ever-expanding gameplay experience with the story campaign and an endless stream of new playable content delivered regularly. Fresh missions, races, puzzles, and challenges from the Barb team bring new surprises that keep the world evolving long after the credits roll. Aki and Jacob, both of you check this out. Aki, start us off. What is going on in Mind's Eye?
Okay, in this, you play as a military vet named Jacob Diaz, and he had some sort of weird experimental tech shoved into his head. Yay for that. That allowed him to control a drone of some sort just by thought. So, yay! It was kind of taken from him, and now he has big old gaps of memory, like, namely, almost his entire military career, for instance. So, he's come back home. And he got a friend of his to get him a job working at this giant robotics company that just, by coincidence, had the individual who made the shit that went into his head. It's just coincidental that that's the... Yeah, totally. And he starts working there as security. Very quickly... everything starts to go to hell because there's a lot of backstabbing within the company at higher levels than Jacob is, as well as eventually the robots start going haywire, and because of the robots being basically everything and everywhere in the city, including a big chunk of the police force, when they go haywire, bad things start going down, so the military comes in and is like, well, we're taking over. They were some of the backstabbing bastards. So yay! You're pulled into all sorts of little hijinks throughout this, and most of it doesn't make a lot of sense, which is fair, because Jacob's not exactly a smart person. Either of them.
Hey, he's right here.
And so he doesn't really understand what's going on, and you, the player, don't, so it kind of works. It's great. the stuff that they're adding to the game on a regular basis are little mini experiences that are part of the arcade, is what they call it. And while you're playing a game, occasionally you'll see this little oval that has a picture of something else in it. That obviously does not belong with the environment that you're fucking in. And if you walk into it, you get pulled into basically this point of view as occasionally it's Jacob himself. Other times it's a completely different character. They rarely have anything to do with what's actually going on in the game right now. But when he when you finish it, you can get different scores on them from bronze to gold. And then you pop back into the main story exactly where you left off, even if you're in the middle of the mission, which is really nice. And Jacob will make some comment on it. So it doesn't really matter if you play those or not. You can also play them without going into the main game, because on the very start screen of the game, all of that stuff's also listed. So if you don't want to touch them while you're playing the main campaign, that's fine. You can play them through there. And yeah, I remember a lot of people were panning this. The two primary things I remembered about when it was panned was that there wasn't really anything going on in the world around you, and that still happens to be the case. You know, when you're driving around, there's cars there with you. And that's it. You're getting
really?
From point
A to point B. Like, I mean, the world's, honestly, that was one of the things I loved about it, is that the world's felt very much alive. Like when you're walking around the factory and stuff like that, like, holy shit, I just wanted to explore it. Like the game world looks beautiful, and like a lot of areas are just insanely detailed.
I'm more meant that there's there's no characters you interact with or anything. No, there's people around stuff that are just
walking.
There's plenty
of people and robots,
but there's not anything to do. It's just
side events and
There's no side events. There's no rarely. Occasionally, you'll find some enemies that are around if you're on a mission, but that's
collectibles.
No. So the world's like, it is a very pretty world, but it has people that are walking around, but you can't do anything with any of them, so it's still kind of dead because of that, though it feels a lot more alive now because there are people there, and apparently there weren't very many of those originally. And there was also timers between missions, and they've gotten rid of the timers completely. None of the driving sections have been timed for me anyways, so that's assume there aren't any more in it. Yeah, that was a big problem for a lot of people, because apparently it was actually kind of tight. So that's, I like that said, that was removed. Yeah. I don't remember what any of the other problems were, so...
Well, Aki, it seems like you're having a good time with it. It is clocking in at $34.99. What are your thoughts on this thing? Does it live up to the hype of being an abysmal project, or does it actually redeem itself and be somewhat enjoyable?
I think it's redeemed itself at that price. I don't know if it's redeemed itself that much. This is, in my opinion, a slightly above mediocre game. It's definitely not as bad as it apparently was, but it's still not a great game. It's not going to be winning any awards. But I think if you like shoot 'em ups, it's not a bad game. It's pretty decent.
All right.
So I think if you get it on sale, I think it's probably worth it. Probably a 20% to 50% off, somewhere in there.
No, the new current price is $34.99, so I don't know if it's going to be going on further sale or not. But
what was the original price?
I think $60, $70, something like that. It was full price.
Oh wow. Now okay.
$35.
Well, at that price, it's a lot better.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they had changed the price.
Yeah, that's part of the new promotional push, is the new price and the new updates and everything like that. They still do sell the deluxe edition upgrade. I don't remember what's in there, but
I think it's some skins and an art book, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on. Next game to talk about is Dracomar, developed and published by Patoon Studio, released April 29th. Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $24.99, PC for $19.99. Welcome to the world of Dracomar. Embark on a beautiful 3D platform adventure and fight King Crad, the evil dragon who wants to conquer the world of Dracomar. Run, jump, and fight the evil forces to rescue the magical Okies. The world of Dracomar is inspired by the Mediterranean landscapes and culture, reflecting on positive human values and a cozy experience. The game portrays a balanced lifestyle and harmony with nature based on friendship, generosity, and togetherness. Friends that travel together, stay together. Bree, what is Dracomar?
I don't know if this is weird or not, but like I totally wanted to play this game after seeing Patoon Studio was the head of the project, because I played a few of their Outright games, like Peppa Pig and Bratz Flaunt Your Fashion, and I wanted to see what they could do outside of an established IP. So I think they made something good here. The world of Dracomar is partly based in Catalan culture. Catalonia is a region in the Mediterranean, which is like in the northeast of Spain, but it's got its own language and culture. And it even has the game localized in the Catalan language as an option. And this is absolutely a family-friendly game, by the way. It's cute. It's wholesome. The action is young player-friendly.
Can I just throw out one thing that I think they should have readjusted in localization? Is the character Fox name.
I know. F-O-C. I know.
Fox.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they should have changed that for the American release.
Yeah,
should have added a K-E-R to it.
Oh, no. but yeah, this is a 3D platformer adventure game. While there are levels to conquer, I really felt this was more of an action adventure than just a 3D platformer. You can swivel the camera around while you jump and explore, looking for hidden secrets. There are NPCs.
There's so many hidden things, too. I thought I was thorough. Oh, what am I missing?
I know. And the NPCs give you some story context, and sometimes the story comes in like little cutscenes, which was cute. Speaking of the main story, the land of Dracomar was always like a peaceful place, and there were cute little critters called Okies, and they looked like little bunny slimes. But a big castle nation rose from the ocean with King Crad. He's like an evil dragon thing, and he's trying to terrorize and take over Dracomar like evil people do. And he transforms the cute little Okies into villainous Mokies. And we, of course, have to save the day. The king starts by capturing Kuroki, which is the magical flower at the center of the islands of Dracomar, and is kind of where they get their like peaceful power from. So there's like themes of taking care of the environment, and you know, these sorts of ideas are kind of in this whole thing. And then you have these three characters to choose from: Kalyu, Fok, and Asperna. And that gives you kind of an option of genders, plus a more androgynous character in Asperna. And you can change your character from the hub world. You also get a special Oki called, is it Iko or Iko? I forget. I think it's Iko. Who is your traveling companion who can carry in your glove once you rescue him in the first level. And he changes things into other things. It's really cool. You can also get outfits by exploring that you can change into at checkpoints on the hub world. The controls are pretty great. Easy to learn. You jump, roll, stomp, spin attack. Terrain gets fun too. There's slides, jumping platforms. As I mentioned, Iko or Iko, I still can't remember, can turn into objects like cannons or you can high jump off of platforms. And the actions are really fun as you soar across the space. You collect several things as you go through the levels: stars, Oki tokens, dark energy balls when you defeat the Mokies. Because they're like corrupted or whatever, so you're like beating the evil out of them or something. Whatever the weird plant thing was, I think it's just part of the Kuroki plant, and you collect those. There's like a hidden one in the level, and then you get more if you collect all the other things. excuse me, there are boxes to smash with your spin punch that will reveal stars and health. You also get to rescue the Okies in cages that are hidden on the map and fight the Mokies and other corrupted creatures like bees and boars and things like that to get the dark energy balls to use against King Crad in the future. I feel like the checkpoints were pretty generous, and also our adorable little flowers with faces. Yeah. It was kind of trippy the first time I saw it. I was like, what is this? Like an NPC? Nope, it's like the checkpoint. Health drops felt pretty generous too, and death has very little penalty, same as getting hit by, you know, enemies. Like, you just go back to the last checkpoint, you lose a few stars, for the most part.
And if you're concerned, check the accessibility options. You could give yourself double health.
Yes. There are 15 levels with different challenges to them and new things to learn. The levels are sprawling and might require some backtracking or replaying to find all the secrets.
Oh, yeah.
I was pretty darn thorough, and I still miss like a barrel of Okies in like the second level. There's mini bosses in some of the levels. Like in the first level, you have a boar that charges and you have to, like, it takes a few hits and you have to like let it run at you and hit the wall, and then you can attack it. And the bosses get bigger in later levels. At the end of each level, if you saved enough of the Okies, they create a climbable pile to get to that special flower part that I mentioned earlier, the Kuroki flower that you need for later. And as Joe mentioned, some good accessibility features in addition to color blindness modes and inverted controls. You can put on like auto run, extra health, and auto camera recenter, which sometimes was helpful. Sometimes not so much. I like to have control of my camera, but in some cases it wasn't bad. The art style is really cute and colorful.
Very cute.
Yeah, there's different biomes in Drakmar. I keep wanting to say Dramakar. It just does not blow off the tongue for me. But there's like a volcanic autumnal area. There's cities on the beach. There's a lighthouse. There's like a snowy area. There were some visual glitches from time to time. I'd see like pieces of terrain disappear at certain angles and reappear at others. Like, it wasn't game breaking. It was just noticeable from time to time. The music was really floaty, full of woodwinds. There's voice acting for the main characters alongside like box text with character avatars. And I found this really helpful learning how a thing should be pronounced in the world.
I will say, though, I thought the voice acting was pretty subpar. Like, I don't want to.
Yeah. No,
I feel bad, but it was very wooden.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was still helpful, I think. And for them creating their own world, like, instead of doing somebody else's IP, like, it was really, I don't know, exciting for me to see what they did. And I thought they did a pretty good job at creating something cool.
Well, I guess the only thing left is to talk price, huh?
Yeah.
It is $25 on console, $20 on PC. What are your thoughts on Drakmar?
So my gut reaction on the price is that it sounds a little steep. But then I remember how long the levels are and how much fun I had exploring a pretty well-crafted world. Like, the game is simple. It's not mind-blowing. It's still an absolute delight to play. Don't go into this expecting like a hard platforming challenge, but more the family-friendly, cute platform adventure it is. While I really enjoyed my time with this game, I think I'm going to give it a try. I feel like they created a solid experience, but there was something it was just missing that I can't quite put my finger on to make it really great.
I can agree. I think the hit detection felt a little off. I wish the landing shadow was a little more prominent.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't double check the options, but I'll probably disable voiceovers because I don't think they're very good. And I really think the character's name is a little problematic for our part of the world. Because someone's going to say something wrong, and I'd still give it a try, though. I think 25 is cute.
Yeah. All right. Next up is Akuma Rise, developed by XCreate, published by Kemco, released May 7th on Xbox Play Anywhere, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Set in the demon realm of Adrabune, the story-driven JRPG follows Kane, a demon who awakens with no memory, washing ashore on a remote island. With the Overlord gone, rival nations clash, and heroes from the Radiant Realm invade, seeking to dominate the Shadow Realm, joined by three demon princesses and a strange mascot. Kane searches for fragments of his lost past while fighting to protect a world on the brink of collapse. Joe, tell us about your time with the Kuma Ryzen. Are the demon princesses hot?
For Aki standards, no.
Okay.
I don't think she... Maybe the bunny. Maybe the bunny. She'd probably go for the bunny. Akuma Rise is the newest RPG coming from X-Create and Chemco. Story, you kind of nailed the wrap-up of what's going on in that. You wake up, you don't know who you are, where you are, and that seems to be a running gag through the game, as after every significant story part with a character, you will black out and reawaken in a new castle with a new princess taking care of you. And that happens four times for each of the four characters. I think it's all four times. Might have been three. But basically, you are going through this game as opposed to most normal Chemco games in that you get four characters right off the bat. You get three characters off the bat. And then you get three characters, and then you get three characters, and then you get three characters, and then you get five. So it's like they're all fractured parties through the game until very late in the game where everyone comes together. I don't feel bad talking about late game stuff in Chemco RPGs because they're very formulaic. I don't think that's a bad thing, mainly because I love these games. I will talk, the fighting in the game is basic standard RPG. It is, this one is a grid of 9 squares on each side where the enemies and your characters can be. Based on your front, middle, back position, you will do more or less damage or more or less attack with magic. Same with the enemy position being closer to the front or the back. They also have spells that will do shape-specific attacks, like a 2x2 grid or an X shape. So there's some strategy in the battles as well. Unfortunately, because it is a Chemco game, you can usually auto your battle your way through most of the game. The levels are fairly short and straightforward. The game itself as a whole was fairly short and straightforward. I did not have any of the DLC bonuses with this game, and I rolled credits in 6 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Usually these things could clock into 15, 20.
Yeah.
But six, I was kind of shocked by that. I rolled credits, and then I realized, oh, it's an RPG. There's more after it. So I continued playing for about another hour, and I rolled credits again. And then I continued the game, and I'm like, all right, I have a couple more quests to do. And then I found one of the worst sins of an RPG. There's a point of no return it doesn't warn you about.
Oh.
So, I'm gonna warn everyone. If you play this game and you think you're fighting the second final boss, save, make a separate save, make another separate save, and make sure you don't save over them. Because if you defeat the boss... I woke up in a castle thinking there's more to do because I still have quests that I can get done. And there's still another princess that I have to accomplish their ending storyline for the ending. No, it was a locked room where you pick your ending. And that's it.
Ew.
You get to pick one of the four characters to wed, or you can wed no one. And that's it. You can't do anything else. You cannot go back to the world. You cannot teleport out of there. You cannot do any more quests. I am at 730 of 1,000 achievement points, and I will never get the bunny ending, the achievement for completing all of the quests, and the one for completing all of the missions, because I'm not going to sink another 7 hours into this game for 3 achievements.
Yeah.
Magic system in the game. This is very similar to the swords eating swords mechanic that Chris likes to talk about all the time. In this one, you get orbs that give you set magic spells. You can equip 3 of them, and then you can equip 2 rings that give you special bonuses towards those or to other battle perks. Between the 3 orbs As you get further in the game, you'll find split orbs that have multiple properties and multiple spells. You eventually want to get to the point where you're leveled up with each of your slots having something with 8 various spells in it. You can have either 4 or 8 depending on the strength of the magic orb you are using. If the orb has a bunch of question marks, you clearly got to level it up more. And to level things up in this game, you could either have them equipped in battle, or you can feed orbs to the orbs to make the orbs stronger orbs. Kind of like weapons eating weapons. It's familiar in that way. They also have the special shops and the special moon currency, whatever it is in this game, that you can spend it to either run a roulette that you could get random items. You can exchange them for experience bonuses or damage bonuses. The first thing I did was pay for the bonus to recover magic after every battle, because I am lazy as fuck. There's also the ones where you can pay to get keys that will open doors in certain areas in certain towns in the map that usually contain game-breaking overpowered weapons and armor. Those are fun to have, and they give you a good amount of stones to start, so you could get the first door no problem in the first castle that you appear in, and it kind of gives you an idea of how that currency system runs through the game. The options give you the ability to skip battles if you are overpowered. The bad thing is it will not award you items. So those special currency to buy in the shop on the special shops, you won't get those unless you do the battles. So I just auto battled my way through, but I kept the battles. Like I said, the current length of the game that I finished on was 7 hours. If I got to do the rest of the quest, it'd probably be closer to 8, not that much longer. As a Kemco game, $20. The length is holding me back from a buy it on this one. I enjoyed my time with it. It was a fun game. It had a different twist instead of guy, girl, weird alien object to just having a bunch of princesses and a weird fucking rabbit. Honestly, $20, try it. I know Kemco games don't go on sale often, but I feel like this would have been better at their $15 price point that they had for a good long time. 20 seems just a bit too much on this one. So I'd give it, try it.
Sounds like it has some good stuff and not so good stuff. So your final verdict is $19.99. It's just
to try it. I appreciate that they did some different stuff in some of the dungeons. One of the dungeons is even like based on like riddles, like the more you take from me, the bigger I get. What am I?
I get being about
a hole. Digging a hole. So yeah, Aki was right. So they had fun stuff in there like it, but it's not going to change the world. It's not going to do anything special by Kemco standards even, but if you like these games and you're like me and you want to have them all and play through all of them, it's Chris will buy this. I know that.
Yeah,
we'll just put it that way.
Right on.
Let's move on to Motor Slice, developed by Regular Studio, published by Top Hat Studios. It released May 5th, Series X and S and PC, PS5 and Steam for $19.99. Parkour through the ruins of a megastructure, climb massive bosses, and hunt down every construction equipment in this slice-of-life action-adventure with immaculate vibes. Play as a girl named P and use everything at her disposal to escape from deadly traps. Run, climb, slide, crouch, wall run, perform stunts, and use your chainsaw to uncross impossible distances. Aki, what is Motor Slice?
Okay. In this, you play as P, and she goes around and destroys things to get scrap. to survive, I guess. It doesn't really explain what she does any of this for. You're just there and you do it. She works for some organization and is immediately at the very beginning of the game cut off from them. So you don't understand why she's doing any of the shit she does, but by God, she's kick-ass at it. And basically, this is a post-apocalyptic world where machines have come alive and are trying to kill the shit out of anyone who enters their territory. So you get, like, a bunch of buildings that are now seemingly blown out. There's dust everywhere because apparently it's turned into a giant sand pit everywhere. And you're going through this giant area and killing all the little creatures, moving on, and eventually fighting the big bosses of the area, killing those so you can unlock the next area to go into. You find some drones around that you can pick up that you can send back if you want for achievements. There's a certain amount of them in every level. If they're around you when you're about to be hit by an enemy, you can actually block the hit and let it destroy one of the drones that you have going around you. So that's a nice little interesting thing you can do. I've not done that because I tend to just send them off immediately after I grab them. And basically you're fighting a whole bunch of little cranes at first. I guess they're not technically cranes, but I don't know what the hell the name of any machinery is, so I'm just going to go with it's a tiny crane. Basically, it's something that digs dirt out of the ground and has treads. I don't remember what they're called, so meh. And they zip around and try to attack you, and you can either dodge away from their hits, or if you time it right, you can attack them at the same time and knock them back. And basically, all of your attacks end up being mostly one-hit kills, at least at the beginning, later on. And when you get to bosses and later enemies, they get stronger. But for all the little crane guys, they are like one-hit kills, but they can kill you in like two hits. I did play the demo of this last year, and they could kill in one hit. So I didn't let myself get hit for a long while, and then I got hit once, and I was like, hey, I'm still alive! Awesome! And then I got hit again and died. And I was like, oh, okay, so it's a two-hit now! Yeah! there are still plenty of enemies that can just kill you in one shot, so that's fun. Yeah, you're going around all these big empty places, and it ends up, you're doing a lot of different platforming. You can run up a wall and then pick yourself off of it to try and reach areas higher up. You can fling yourself from foothold to foothold. You can run along pipes that are sticking off in between buildings. You can grab onto street lights, the top part of it, and swing yourself across them, things like that. It's real fun. There's also some sections for you to use your chainsaw outside of combat, and they're kind of fun. A little difficult, but fun. There's these metal sections that are bright yellow, and you can basically jam your chainsaw into it, turn it on, and it chainsaws you across it. So if there's this beautiful, big old yellow section over a giant gap, you just chainsaw yourself across it, and you can move up and down while you're doing that. So you can zigzag along it if you want, stuff like that. Occasionally you'll find them that go straight up, and you jam it in, and it just yanks you straight up to the top. It's fun. It does not do the opposite direction, though, sadly. There's no going down from there. That's a difficult one to do, because sometimes you're kind of required to do that to get some of these drones, and that's not an easy thing to do, because the mechanics don't exist for that, so you kind of have to just fuck around and figure it the hell out, and it is not easy. Thankfully, when you die, you respawn very close to where you died. Basically, any room you go into is a new quick save, more or less. So anytime you die, you go right back there. So it's nice and quick, because you're expected to die a lot. Be it from enemies that shoot chains or chainsaws, saw blades at you that'll cut you right into ribbons wherever they hit you. So you can be dodging and it'll clip your neck and take off your head, which is really funny because you actually see the character get torn apart however they're torn apart. So that's kind of funny. And yeah, for bosses, they are gigantic behemoth machines. The first one was this giant dump truck, basically, that was like 5 stories high. And along it, you had all the yellow paths for the chainsaw. Well, those are, for bosses, those areas are where you have to run along with your chainsaw to do damage to the boss. So you actually have to hit all of them, and then they typically, they'll stop being yellow and they'll turn gray, and that just basically means you can still go across it if you need to, but it's not going to do any more damage to it, and you have to basically climb up the machine damaging all these different parts, and these parts you have to damage to get higher up in the machine anyways, because most of them are chainsaw parts where you use that to get from one section to the next section, and just, it's really cool. I fucking love it. Yeah. There's lots of little fun things you can do as well. For instance, you're technically, you're moving her, but you're also, the camera is a drone that's following her, her partner. And you can move around to where you're facing her and then zoom in. And after a couple seconds, she starts getting shy and stuff. And it's like, would you stop it? And things like that. You can also turn the light on and blind her, basically. Things like that. All for achievements and because it's kind of cute to do. And yeah, she can occasionally find some spaces where she can slack off, as it said. And the drone and her get to interact with each other. Granted, she doesn't understand anything the drone is saying, even though you as the drone are saying stuff, because you get to pick between options of what to say, but she doesn't understand anything you're saying, so it's just a bunch of little fun, cute things. I've thoroughly enjoyed my time with this. I am so glad they gave us a demo so I could get even more into it, and I'm so glad they gave us the game, because it's been fucking kick-ass.
Sounds like you're enjoying it just a little, yeah?
Yeah, this might be one of my game of the years. I am shocked to have 2 already this year. This is weird.
Now, let's talk price on it. Clocks in at $19.99. It is also available as part of Xbox Game Pass. And if you buy it in the next 2 weeks, you could save $2 and get it for $17.99. But for $20, what are your thoughts?
Oh, 100% worth it. And honestly, go ahead and play it on Game Pass for a little bit just to make sure it's for you, but I'm sure it will be. And then just buy it. Just buy it. Give them the money. They deserve the money. It is an amazing game.
All right. Very good. Let us move on to Arcade Archives 2 Cyber Commando, developed and published by Hamster Corporation, released April 29th, Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5, $16.99. Cyber Commando is an action game released by Namco Limited in 1994. Board your vehicle and fight to stop a security computer malfunction that has broken out in a space colony. The thrill of locking on and slamming missiles into a split-second opening, combined with diverse strategies unique to each vehicle, accelerates this ultimate one-on-one battle. Jacob, with as much voice as you can, tell us what's going on in Cyber Commando.
So Cyber Commando is essentially if Namco looked at Virtual On and was like, huh, we can do that. So instead of like, you know, your mecha robots, you're more so fighting in these like hover tanks, futuristic ones, obviously. They come in all sorts of like different shapes. Like some of them have legs. Other ones have like kind of treads. Other ones are like just kind of float. And so it very like when I make the comparison to Virtual On, like I do mean it. Like you even have like the little like hanger thing where like you watch it exit like the long ass tube that it's coming out of. You have arenas that are very similarly shaped. Yeah, so, and like, it's like this cast of different robot characters that you have to fight against one-on-one in each of these things as you move on to the next one. There's power-ups all over the levels, so you can get more ammo or, like, have better ammo temporarily. And you're firing off, like, your gun, which can overheat, but you also have, like, lasers and bombs and all that kind of, or not lasers, missiles. And bombs and stuff like that that you can shoot your enemy with. I mean, it was interesting to say the least. The controls are really wonky. And
how
I
does
never
it control. Like,
so it makes it seem like it should be controlling like a tank almost, but like you're using the left joystick and like the XYAB buttons, like, to determine your movement, and you're using the triggers for like your weapons and stuff like that, but it's just like it never feels comfortable and it never feels right. And it just like, it's I don't understand it. Like, it's I wanted to like this game more. Like, I don't know why buttons are used to like for movement purposes in that regard. It would have seemed more like the joystick should have been used, but I don't know. Like, as I said, it's interesting because you're looking at Namco's version of Virtualon, and like, I like the idea of it. I like the character models. Like, I like that. I don't know, those kind of games from that time period of like fighting games, but like, I mean, like, you'd also see it with, like, Sega's, like, Virtual Fighter 2 and Last Bronx and stuff like that. Just, like, yeah, that kind of blockiness.
I'm trying to find more info on this game, and there really isn't too much about it. It was released 94 in the arcades only in Japan.
So
it was a sequel to Cyber Sled.
Yeah, and essentially, like, the pictures of the arcade
cabinet.
Thank you, cabinet, that I've seen. It has a two-stick setup like Virtualon. Like, so
were there any like control options you could go through?
Not that I could really mess with to make hold on, sorry. Not that made it any kind of easier. But like, I mean, it looks cool. I like the idea of it, but controlling
the controls are just,
it's just weird. Like, and it's hard to get used to.
Yeah, especially if it's one of the more expensive ACAs too.
How much does it run for?
This one's $16.99.
Oh geez. So yeah, same price
all
as these, like the eight,
yeah, the, all, the, like, all the bigger and Sega and Namco games have been $17, like, yeah.
Okay.
I guess because of the system, the arcade system that was like, this is one, the screenshots even say two coins. You needed 50 cents to play this game.
Which honestly, like, cause I mean, like, I think back to like, the jet ski one that I like.
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah. I forget. Like, we reviewed it like a couple months ago anyway, but it's just like, that one was four quarters. Like,
bananas.
Like, yeah.
All right, $17 on this one. What is your verdict?
I'd put it at a try it. As I said, the controls are real weird for it, and I wish that there was some other, like, I wish I could just use the right and like right, left and right sticks for movement. Like, it's how like just about literally every single tank in video gaming is set up nowadays. So,
no. All right, next up, Farm Manager World, developed by Cleverson Games, Sim Farm, and Playway, published by Ultimate Games, released April 24th, Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Immerse yourself in the farming world of Farm Manager World. Build your agricultural empire in exciting new locations around the world. Cultivate exotic plants, breed animals, utilize crop rotation and fertilizers to care for the soil, and trade resources with friends. Ultimate Games was nice enough to hook us up with a couple of extra copies of this. GoldenEye already got a copy earlier. We have two more to give away through the night. We'll give one at the end of the show and at the end of the music. So stick around all night and maybe you'll win a copy. But for now, Bree, what is Farm Manager World?
Well, I'm not big into realistic modern farming sims as a general rule. I'm more of a homesteading kind of person for level of farming interest. But there's some intersect there, but again, not my typical kind of sim. At least one of the devs of this game has some experience with other farm games like Farm Manager 2022 and Farm Tycoon, neither of which I've played. I have played other tycoon-style games, and this definitely qualifies as one of them. So if you're looking for a relaxing farm sim, you're in the wrong place. This is a management-heavy game with detailed logistics. You don't get to drive the vehicles like you do in Farming Simulator. You manage them instead.
Oh.
So there's three modes: campaign, free mode, and then there's scenarios. The scenarios are kind of cool. You get to do things like be a textile farmer, grow hot peppers for a hot sauce maker. There's like a population decline sort of doomsday scenario. In free mode, you can change biomes from Europe to Central America and Asia. And you can set your difficulty settings for things like yield size, cash, and animal production from easy to extreme. And you can turn things off like fires and stuff like that that'll damage your farm. And then the campaigns, there's Europe, Central America, and Asia, and they range in difficulty from easy to hard. I started with Europe because it was easier, and I wanted to know what the fuck I was doing. There are some interesting things in the settings. You can toggle a whole bunch of warnings for different factors in the gameplay menu. Like you can turn off warnings for when you're close to bankruptcy or something has caught fire. I'm not sure why you'd want to turn those off, but you can. You can change between Celsius and Fahrenheit and invert controls too. You can change the time for autosaves, which is a default at 15 minutes. You can manual save too, though. Oh, and you can turn vibration off for the controller if that bugs you. But, you know, so I mostly spent time with the campaign. I checked out a couple of the scenarios for a few minutes just to kind of see the idea. The campaign starts out with you buying a house. There's a built-in tutorial assistant that you can use when you start, and I highly recommend it because without it, I would be completely lost. But fair warning, once you start the tutorial, you're in for like a 3-hour tour that you can't turn off once you start. You'll need that house to house your workers, and then you'll be led through a whole series of segments on how to do things like lay a farm out and make roads and buy equipment and hire people. And yeah, the interface is a little tricky to use for me. The info bar is at the bottom of the screen that tells you like the date, time, and temperature. It has a speed bar to speed up the game once you've set things to grow. There are additional tools you can access by pressing the Y button to interact with that bar. And then you use the D-pad to get around, and then you're going to use the D-pad a lot. There's nothing telling you that to start. You just kind of have to figure that out on the main menu and realize that concept persists throughout the game. There are so many things to do in this game. There's a plethora of crop styles, animal husbandry, yes. You need to hire workers to plant things and take care of said animals. Then there's a lot of depth, like using better quality of feed increases your animal output. Plus, you have to manage your inventory for the feed to either grow or purchase it. It gets near micromanagement level when you have to connect your warehouses to the type of inventory to make sure it shows up in your animal pen and so on. I found a lot of these systems to be overwhelming instead of intuitive. Some of that is not having the patience for a lot of tycoon management, personally, and part of it is the way that the game presented options and systems. It just wasn't as good as I would have liked. But going back to the depth, like I was out of my depth, those workers you need for the animals or crops all need to be hired through a tab where there are a lot of details to them about whether or not they were temporary or permanent, skilled or not in the areas you need, and then you have to have housing for them too. So lots of stuff going on. Like a lot of games in the management genre, you have to learn how to do things in the game. So you're starting a farming empire, you need to research things. Like before you can use large farm equipment, you'll need a certificate. And Swidden Agriculture is in a tree that you'll need to unlock. But to get to certain techniques, you'll need to go through a pile of prerequisites to get there. So you need to plan your path well on what style of farming you want to do, ultimately. Also, managing your money is a huge task. Everything costs money, from the certificates to the feeds, the crop seed to the equipment. And then there's housing and all the employees you have to pay to work in it. And then there's an open market to buy and sell from. You can see a ticker on your main bar, crop prices that are up and down, to help you decide what to grow or avoid next. It's pretty complex. I can't remember if I've already mentioned that there's a timing. I think I did. Timer speed setting on the main interface. Yeah, at the bottom. I talked about that. You'll be using that a lot, because if you don't, it'll be like watching grass grow, because that is legitimately what you'll be doing. There's a lot of hurry up and wait in this game. You set skills to learn or crops to grow, and then all that takes time to process. If you're waiting for the money to make your next improvement, there's a little bit of wait time to deal with that. And even with that speed boost, there will be some lulls in the game. The music is gentle, generic sim music. Not a complaint about it. Just, it was background noise that didn't suck. The graphics were fine, but overall impression of the graphics design felt sterile, maybe. The interface was not visually interesting. As a result, it kind of felt, I don't know, outdated. Like it was a visual throwback to an Tycoon style game. And while you don't need to reinvent the wheel every time you go out, it's nice to add a little bit of spice to things where you can, I guess. Some good things about the game. Detailed management systems where you can get a good variety of buildings and systems coordinated. There are systems with different climates and fun scenarios to make for fun gameplay. Mechanics with a basis in reality. You do have to pay attention to things like soil and crop rotation and just any number of... It's got a lot of realism mechanics. Some bad stuff. I struggle with the learning curve. Like, not being a huge Tycoon Management game player, I got stuck really early on trying to get through the lengthy tutorial section. The interface left something to be desired. It was somehow limited and also overwhelming. Like, some of the systems seemed unnecessarily deep or limiting, where you couldn't hire some people during certain seasons, but then there was little to tell you why initially, or the amount of sliders on the employee seemed excessively deep. So basically, loop of the game is to grow, harvest, sell, reinvest your profits into your infrastructure, hire people to run things, and hopefully get your balance of operations right in a revolving marketplace to turn a profit. Instead of feeling rewarded, I felt frustrated and bored with some of the overly deep mechanics, though.
Well, should we talk price on this one?
Yeah.
It's $25. Seems like you got to be really into stats and management for this one.
Yeah, if you're a pro at Tycoon games or you're really into farm sims, you're probably going to feel right at home with this one. And I don't know that I could recommend this for casual players or those new to the genre. Like, the control and interface were not as intuitive. And even with the in-depth tutorial, I felt kind of lost and overwhelmed a lot. It took me way too long to figure out how to hire someone in the beginning of the game.
Oh, God.
Yeah, overall, I'm going to give this like a tentative try it. Like, the price seems really reasonable for the depth of mechanics and gameplay.
It's just not something for everyone.
Yeah, the game seemed like good for Tycoon fans, but it just wasn't for me.
That makes sense. These usually seem to be for niche audiences. So
Yeah.
All right, well, I think something that's going to be something for more wider audiences is Indoor Baseball, developed and published by Snowday Software, released April 24th as Xbox Play Anywhere, Switch, PS5, and Steam for $14.99. Play a fast-paced game of one-on-one baseball where your parents won't let you. Break windows for home runs, smash toys and other household items, and avoid all the destruction while playing an arcade-style baseball game. Jacob, tell us about your time playing MLB The Show Indoor Baseball Edition.
So this game, MLB The Show does not have to worry about the newcomer
on the diamond with this one. I like this game.
Like, it's an interesting premise. I'll give it that. Okay.
What is it? So let's start off. What is it?
Yeah, I'm getting there.
Yeah. Well, what is it?
So it's like an arcadey type baseball game. Indoor baseball, and you're playing in various locations where you normally wouldn't be able to play baseball, like your bedroom, the basement, a grocery store, all sorts of different places. It's you versus the AI or somebody else if you have somebody playing with you. It's very simple rules. Like, it's, you know, you're just trying to get the other guy out. Like, you've got ghost runners, very simple stuff. And there is like a story mode to it, as this one kid is just trying to become a really good baseball player. There is like a season mode that you can play and hopefully win the championship. There is also like a quick one-on-one, you know, game that you can set up with this. And currently I'm trying to go through the campaign. I haven't made it past level one yet because the boss is a cheap son of a bitch who, amazingly enough, will no matter what, like, somehow get a run at last chance, as if the game's just like, I don't feel like playing against you.
The AI in this game is a little on the sus side. I will agree there.
Dude, it is super sus, especially if you're in an area with a low ceiling. Okay, that basement level is some major bullshit because you can hit every single damn ball right, but in amazingly enough, will hit the roof, or not the ceiling. It'll hit the ceiling and then bounce into his hands, no matter where he's at. It is the most bullshit thing. And so, like, you know, I'm striking out the CPU, and meanwhile, like, he's like, I'm just doing like three hits and like he's catching every single one of them. This game is some bullshit. Like, I mean, but then again, like,
it's,
but then
fun though. I love the concept but, of it.
Yeah, I like love- it. Hold on. Okay. Like, all right. But I mean, like,
trying to chime
meanwhile,
in.
The grocery store level, I love that one. High ceilings, like, you're trying to get it into the cart to get a home run. It's fun stuff. Like, I do like the locations that they came up with everything. It's just some of them are just super bullshit. As you were saying.
I think the game is a lot more fun with simple hitting. I think trying to line up shots with the analog stick and this game's touchiness is just it's easier to just put simple hitting on, and I wish the game would remember that. Like, when I turn it on, stay on forever. Mm-hmm. I never want to turn you off. I never want to have normal hitting in this game.
Never want to turn me off, eh?
I never ever threw up in my mouth a bit. Anyway, I like the home run derby in this. I thought that was pretty fun. I enjoy that there's multiple modes.
I have yet to hit more than two home runs in a game or a home run derby.
I think I got four is my high.
Yeah, I'm just like, I don't know how the hell they expect you to like just be slamming home runs all damn day.
But compared to the show, like 4,000 people made the show for $70. One dude made this for $15. If it comes down to it, I think I would take this over the show with those options.
I mean, I did not realize that this was all one guy. That is pretty damn impressive.
Solo dev.
Neat.
Yeah. So $15. What are your thoughts on it?
I think it definitely needs some tweaking. Currently I'm standing at a try it with it. But you know, as I said, if like the AI wasn't as sus, I'd probably put it at a buy it.
I can agree there. Some physics touches on the game, maybe some AI touches on the game, rework it a little bit, make it a little bit more fair. I don't like getting robbed out of home runs because the ball like didn't roll into a basket. It just stayed on the rim.
Dude, it felt so often that the game would just like, nope, that's not going to be a home run. Like, and it felt, I honestly, there were times where it felt like the like rules did not apply to the AI.
But I kept playing. It kept bringing me back. I was having fun with it. So
yeah, I'd give it's
it,
true.
I would agree on the try it. If they do some touches to fix the AI and make it more approachable, I would definitely give it a buy it. It's really close the way it is. It's very recommended for me. All right, moving on. Plantera 2 Golden Acorn, developed by Virat P Studios, published by Rattlake Games, released May 1st, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, $4.99. Tend to the magical tree and harvest its golden acorns. Grow your garden from a small vegetable patch into a sprawling sanctuary of plants, vegetables, bushes, trees, cute animals, and creatures. Aki, what is going on in Plantera 2? A vulgar display of flowers.
Okay, in this game, you play as God, and you're basically, this is a idle clicker-style game. You have little weird-looking blue dudes who go around and pick up produce from plants, and that gets you some coinage, and you use that coin to buy more plants. It is what it is. And as you do that, you eventually start to get some experience as well. That experience unlocks golden acorns, and you can use those golden acorns to unlock some specialty upgrades. Like, it can grow the oak tree where all the acorns come from. Or you can use it to buy a few different types of upgrades that go specifically on that tree, and they're unlocked at certain levels of that tree. But otherwise, you're just buying various types of ground plant, bush plant, and tree plant. And selling creatures and
hats and flowers.
And chirping birds, and they're coming to take me away, hoo-hoo, ha-ha. Anyways,
yeah, you got birdies.
And yeah, so
it's an idle game. Let's just be upfront. This is an idle game. It's one of those games that you're supposed to leave in the background and just chill as you check on it every couple of minutes to plant new things. The game, the little blue dudes collect the vegetables, so you don't have to. It's not like anything's going to be taken from you.
Kinda.
Well, birds could take a fruit, but that's barely mentionable. Like, that it's negligible what they do.
True,
especially compared to like how big you can get things going later in the game.
Yeah, it gets ridiculous because you can buy like to where there's 26 plots of land, and each one of them holds like 4 or 5 ground plants, like 3 bushes and like 2 trees. It's now, a lot.
Each individual plot is 2 1-1.
Really? That's it?
Yes. But because you're buying a plot, you get both sides, it feels like it's 4 2-2. It's just 2 2-1-1s.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. But there, this isn't one that you can turn off and then come back and get stuff set provided to you until later on. You do unlock that ability as an upgrade that you have to buy per hour. And then you can turn it off for however many hours you have upgraded it. And when you come back, you get a bunch of money and acorns, which is nice. I think I got it to 14 hours before I was like, I have finished the achievements. I'm good.
I kind of prefer it that way because, like, if I go to Clicker Heroes right now, how many fucking years have I been away from that?
I have no idea.
How much shit am I going to have? And it'll be gone in, like, 20 minutes because I'm still on the same level I was at all those years ago. But with this, it doesn't needlessly calculate for years at a time when you come back. You're gone for 5 hours. Here's 5 acorns.
Yeah. There is one thing you need to keep in mind. The game does not like it when you buy and sell a whole bunch of stuff all in really quick succession.
It likes to crash when you do that, so keep that in mind. Because that happened to me semi-regularly. I'd what be like, okay.
What were you selling?
Well, I would buy a lot of the decorations and stuff and put them all in one place, and then I'd expand past that place, and then I'd just go and sell them all real quick.
You know,
and
you
then
can move them, right?
Yeah, I didn't know that for a while, no. Because I wasn't paying a lot of attention, so I would just try and sell it, and it would crash. But I also had times where I was like, oh, let me buy, like, 12 plants and place them real quick, and it didn't like that either. So, careful with that.
I thought the way the game was structured was that it was, like, you couldn't just build a stockpile and then drop them all at once. You have to buy one and place it. Buy, place, buy, place.
You do, but if you do that quickly, it doesn't like it. It really, really doesn't like that.
Hmm. Well, I didn't run into that, so you're a weirdo.
Yeah, I like to break things.
I did get my 1K in this. I enjoyed it. I bought this one, like, day I saw it. I enjoyed the first Plantera. And this is back in the old days when Chris Huber was here, so he's the one who made the vulgar display a flower joke way back then that I just reused today, and then I'm going to reuse florists from hell instead of cowboys from hell.
Fair enough.
So I'm glad this one came to console. I'm glad Rattlelake brought it to console, and I dropped my $5 on it, and I enjoyed it. So for you at $5, what do you think of Plantera 2?
I think it's totally worth playing. I think it's a really fun, cute little game. But even if you're not particularly super into it, it's still a fuck it, why not? At the bare minimum, because it's only $5. Just go get it.
It's a fun little idle farting around background.
I hope we get another one. I really like these.
I don't know if they made a Plantera 3 or not.
Well, if they haven't, they better get the fuck on it. That's all I gotta say.
Don't know what Verratti has been up to in the recent years.
Hopefully working on Plantera 3.
Hope so. I am the 6th fastest person to beat Plantera 2, by the way, on TA.
Nice. Congrats.
4 hours, 5 minutes.
It took me a lot longer than that.
And someone's cheating at the top with 0 minutes, so.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. 3.5 is pretty impressive to 1K this, though. That's quick work, 3.5 hours.
Yeah, it took me significantly longer, because I was very unlucky, because you have to bash the 10 moles, and that is best to do right at the start of the game, because they show up more often. Yeah, and
I started a second game just to get that achievement.
I had to do that, too, because by the time I was where I was, I kept trying to find them around. I was like, fuck, I can't find the little bastards. I spent hours and hours trying to find them all in my primary save, and I got like 3 or 4, and I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to start a new game. I'm never going to find these little bastards. Got it real quick after starting a new game.
All right, well, let's move on. Next up is Versebound, developed by Conifer Digital, published by Silesia Games. This one released May 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, 7th on the Switch, PS4, PS5. $6.99. Rewrite your legend through verse and blood and being respite to the tragic youth of Kalevala by besetting mythical creatures, monsters, spirits, and even life and death themselves in battle. Perform rituals, navigate treacherous lands, and learn from every misstep to become stronger. Jacob, how much stronger did you become, or are you still weak and feeble?
I'm still weak and feeble.
Sweet.
And also in the game, I'm also weak and feeble.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what's Versebound?
So Versebound is, it's a roguelike, very much, like, very similar to, like, Vampire Survivors, Greedland.
It's a Survivor-like, basically.
Survivor. Except this one has a plot.
A what?
Yeah, there's actually a plot in this. There's a story and people to actually talk to. I haven't seen one of these since, well, all right, so Devil Jam, which was like a month or two ago, but...
Yeah, proud of you.
All right, well, it felt different anyway. Like, I mean, you really don't see stories that often in here, in this genre. And he plays this guy who died, got his ass kicked, and you wake up at this village, and you have to go out into the forest and try killing... all these monsters out there, along with all these, like, what are essentially cryptids, for, like, the forest. And, as you're doing this, you're collecting resources, which are going to be necessary, for you to uncover your story as to who you were and where you're going to go. Like, you know, your future. I mean, not like travel, but, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then of course you can make some of the changes permanent, but like there's all sorts of different weapons that you can choose from, like, so like you have your passive and active abilities, and you have to, as you level up, you have to decide what you're going to invest your points in and stuff like that. And like, I like that it's not just like, oh, well, you know, +5 attack now on your arrows or whatever. Like, it, like, I don't know. It, like, it feels like it's a little bit more in depth without getting too nitty gritty. But it was just like, I loved like upgrading the weapons and stuff like that. And like, just, you know, when it would give me like extra shots of stuff, especially like the arrows, because oh my God, you need that bow and arrow like to get through anything. Like your little butter knife that you start off with does not like, is not your best thing. But yeah,
cut it.
But, yeah, so you're going to move through the forest and you're going to die, and you're going to wake up back in the village, and you're going to have to go back out to the forest again and die and wash, rinse, repeat. And eventually you will start bringing out those cryptids, and there's like 8 of them, that you have to kill all of them, to be able to advance to the next thing, which is really just your next quest. So then you now have more stuff to do and you get to learn more about your story. So honestly, like, it isn't as visually detailed as some of the other ones out there, but like, I like the feel of it. I like the gameplay. And I like the retro look of it. I'm having fun with this one, and it's definitely going to be sticking around on my Xbox.
All right. Well, it clocks in at $6.99.
Oh, wow.
Give really? Us your thoughts. And
yeah, definitely for $7.
Are you going to crawl back into bed and die now that you've finished your review?
Wait, what about Mind's Eye?
You were gone. We moved on.
But my fucking computer crapped out.
I know, but we had to move on.
But I didn't get to talk about it.
It's Mind's Eye. Do you need to?
I was enjoying when I played. Like, I don't know where it got cut off at, because I, like, you had
literally like, when I said, thoughts? Jacob, what are your thoughts? You're like,
I know, and I liked it, like,
and then you were gone. You had one sentence, so we couldn't salvage it. It was literally unsalvageable unless we just waited and however long it took you to get back, and I had no clue how long it would be. So we just had to move on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I like
it's okay. It. Well, you could talk about Mind's Eye to your wife. She'll listen to you.
She's asleep.
Someone has to.
No, she doesn't.
Anyway. She
does not have to listen to me.
Anyway. We got one right. Final game to talk
Love
about.
You all, bye.
You're leaving now? Okay, bye.
Wait, I thought you were telling me to go. You know what? I'm going. Bye.
Love it. Shows a train wreck. Now my throat's all shitty. God damn it, Jacob. You're getting me sick.
Yeah, we both had coughing fits because we laughed too much. Oh, man.
Anyway, final game to talk about tonight is a preview, one last preview of Saintess of the Golden Bow, developed and published by Transparent Games. This one's coming out next year on Steam. Reborn as Saintess of the Golden Bow in your favorite fantasy novel, rewrite the fate in this Otome visual novel. Forge bonds, evade death, and battle the Demon Queen. Your choices shape the realm's destiny. Will you save the world or meet a tragic end? Steam has an Otome Fest going on right now, and the fine folks at Transparent Games asked us to take one more look at their final preview build of Saintess of the Golden Bow. Aki, what did you think of the new build? What are your thoughts on the game in general? Tell us everything.
Okay, so from the prior one, they have actually changed some of the scenes and stuff. So old saves don't work anymore. So you have to start a brand new save in the demo to see all the stuff. And that includes some of the choices that you make throughout the game. So it still ends up with like the same feel, but like the things that you say end up being different. And obviously this is Otome, you're a girl trying to get with guys, and in this one you've been teleported into a web novel or something as a girl who was supposed to die, and all the guys are supposed to be gay, but now they all want you, so that's weird. It does go a bit further than the primary demo did. You get more interactions with all of the group. There's your servant, the head priest of the religious order of this place, and the first prince of the kingdom. All of them have their drawbacks. All of them have the things they're good at. What those are, I have no idea, but I'm sure someone's going to find what they're good at. It just probably won't be me. Thankfully for this one, when you have choices, after you pick it, it will tell you if someone ended up liking that. It'll give them a bit of affection, and it tells you which individual got the affection. So you can also go back and check and see what options give affection, because if it doesn't say anything, it don't give shit. Occasionally there are options that give you affection with one person or another, which I wasn't expecting, because in the primary demo, basically all your interactions were her and this individual, and that was it. Whereas this one, you end up seeing her with multiple individuals at the same time, and your choices can either raise affection with one person or the other, which is interesting. Excuse me. Cute. Sorry about that. No, yeah. No. I'm still sad that we can't get with a general named Greg or George or something. I don't remember his name off the top of my head right now. But out of all the characters, he's the best one, because he's actually really nice to you and seems to care about you. And it's great, because you are not a prim and proper noble in this. You're a tomboy. And everyone kind of looks down at you because you don't have any of the social etiquette that you're supposed to. And that's a thing of contention between basically everyone and you, including your own family. Your dad talks shit about you to your face and to other people still directly in front of you because he's a dick because of that and stuff. And this other guy, he goes out of his way. He's to check in on you. He can teach you how to have some of that etiquette and stuff. Just because he's like, you're having a hard time, I want to help out. And I'm like, why can't we hit on him? He's a good guy. So, yeah. The demo ended up being probably another hour or two longer than the prior one did. Because it hits everything the first one did. It just continues from there, and it ends up you get actually to fight the Demon Queen, and then it basically resets the world, and they're like, yeah, thanks for playing, please come and play the full game. And I was like, oh, So am I going to be playing through this multiple times just because it resets? That's kind of cool. I like that aspect. Because otherwise, this was, you know, it was a nice quick thing to get from the very beginning to the end. Took me a day, not even a full day to do that. And I was like, oh, that's cool. This is, I didn't actually expect to get to where I was fighting the Demon Queen, because that's literally what I thought the game was all about doing. I was like, oh, how are we here already? What is going on? And then you die and it resets. And I was like, oh, that's going to be a cool mechanic. I'm going to like that.
Well, so you'll find out in a year.
Must I wait another year for this?
Yeah, you do.
Can't I just have it now?
No, yell at Transparent Games. They're the ones who are making it. I can't do anything about it.
Well, you can yell at them for me. That way they don't look at me and like be like, this bitch? No.
They're going to reply back like, will you guys just shut the fuck up and talk about our game instead of how weird you are?
Probably.
No, we can't. We're weird.
Yeah.
So, this comes out next year. We've talked about it a number of times. Is it still on your good side, bad side? Should people wishlist it, follow it? What do you think people should do in regards to that game?
For games like this one specifically, Otomes have a very small group of people who play it. Everyone who's seen this probably already has it on their wish list. Sadly, I don't think most of the people live with us right now are going to be like, yay, yay for this. Maybe Bree. Right, Bree? You want it?
Yeah. Most of them are also Xbox players, so it depends on if this comes to Xbox in the future.
Yeah, the original demo I played, I remember enjoying. I just did not have time to take a look at the changes, but it sounds like it's really good. So
I think you're gonna like the changes. Play it when you have a chance.
I definitely will.
Yeah, check out.
But yeah, if you like Otomes, this is definitely going to be one that you probably already have your eye on it. But if you don't, definitely go wishlist this and check it out. Check the demo out. It's good.
And check out the Otome Fest on Steam if it's still going on when you hear this. Check out the demo to that and many other games in the fest. And have fun reading.
Inky bun buns.
A lot of novels. That is it for this episode. We made it through. I guess we're finished. Big thanks to Jacob for coming on, despite how sick he was. Big thanks to John the Arcadian for coming on, hanging out with us. We are going to be ending the show with Sky High from Daytona, USA, at request of John from Super Strikers. So, what do you think of that?
Awesome.
I think that's what you usually are, so it's fine.
All right, well, there you go. Does anyone have any final words to end this episode?
Titties are good?
Good enough, I guess.
I didn't even specify which one, so y'all can enjoy them at your own leisure, whatever type you like.